Good afternoon, this is Gary Kavanagh here with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Today is the 30th of the 10th. It is a Wednesday. Here are the stories we want to discuss today. Brexit has finally led to an election in England. That will be coming up in December. We just want to very briefly talk about that because I'm looking forward to not talking about this for the next couple of months if possible. We want to talk about Martin Kenny, a Sinn Féin TD whose car was burned out. It's been described as an offence on democracy, offensive to the democratic process, etc. We want to just have a quick chat about that. And then we want to go about talk about something you may have missed during the week, which is the results of the Italian regional elections. They had some fairly surprising results that may bode quite poorly for the ruling government. So I suppose we'll start with the Brexit election, Michael. This, as everything related to Brexit, was a bit of a total farce. Labour agreed that they would have an election immediately after abstaining from the last vote to call an election. And then there was So they had a vote to call the election. Labour abstained. The vote didn't go through because of that, because you need to win by a certain majority in order to actually have an early election under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act of Britain. Then they say, actually, now, because of the extension, we're open to an election. Then there's words that people are going to try and amend the bill that will call for the election by amending it so that 16 and 17-year-olds can vote. And there is an argument that perhaps they'll try and amend it so that European citizens can vote in the election. That looks like it could happen. It gets slapped down because it's deemed to not be within scope of the bill under procedural rules. And instead, we just get a straight, this is, you know, do you want an election or not? Well, I think the question put to them was, do you want to change the date of the election? And they did. The election will now be on the 12th of December. Labour has already come strongly out of the gate with a very well put together campaign ad. And they seem raring to go. But on the other hand, Jeremy Corbyn is about as popular as cancer of the bone in children, which politically is to his detriment.
Yeah, that's, thank you for that. Well, first of all, can we say just a little, two cheers anyway, if not quite three cheers. We are now beyond Alamein. We are now heading towards, I think, the invasion of Sicily. We are now beyond the end of the beginning and heading into the possibilities that we may see the end of this thing. We have some kind of a deal, which is over there, waiting to be implemented. We have the agreement on an election on December the 12th. This is the first December election to be held since 1923. So that just goes to tell you people don't like elections and Christmas shopping to cross over, as well as dark nights and cold days. But yeah, listen, it's great news for everybody who just wants to be euthanized in a new sense, put out of their misery. Labour, I think this is going to be an interesting election, more interesting than a lot of our friends perhaps over here would like to think. It is not, it seems to me, a game, set and match assumption that this is going to lead to a massive boost and majority for the Tory party in the UK. There are so many variants going on and so many local variables between differences between Wales, Scotland, the North East, the North West, the Liberals in the South West, the Tory Remainers in the South East and in London. Also, you're talking about the Labour campaign. They really genuinely do seem to be ready to, rare to go. They're talking about viral campaigns. Also, Momentum, which is the internal left-wing group that backs Corbyn and got Corbyn elected, is ready to launch, apparently, tens of thousands of foot soldiers onto the street.
I think the thing to remember here is that while the Tories wanted the election, the decision of when election would be was always Labour's choice.
It was in their gift.
Because they needed to give their numbers to the Tories to get the numbers the Tories needed to get the early election. So while the Tories have wanted an election, Labour have been able to go, well, the Tories don't honestly know when the election is coming because we can stop at any time we want. We know when this is coming, though. so we can prepare to be fairly strong out of the gate. Now, whether or not they'll keep that going through the campaign, I think is a more open question. But it did enable them to have a very strong first day. And it's good for Corbyn as well, because it gives, I mean, the Labour Party is just kind of sniping at each other over various things, ranging from the unpopularity of Corbyn to what seems to now be the institutional anti-Semitism of the party.
Yeah, no.
This gives them something to go for, and that'll keep them out of Corbyn's, keep them from sniping at Corbyn too much.
I think that Corbyn and the Politburo and the Labour Party will hope that the actions that they took in the last couple of months on the anti-Semitism issue will have at least taken the worst of the sting out of that issue. Also, for good or for ill, my suspicion is that outside of certain areas, I'm not sure how massively the perception that will impact on the voters. The thing that people have to remember over here and is that we're talking about a different policy dispensation in the UK than the one that we associate traditionally with the Tory party. This is no longer the Tory party of, say, Margaret Thatcher or John Major. That was a union, that was a coalition between social conservatives, British nationalists, and economic liberals, if people were liberal in the 19th century sense, free trade, small government people. Now, Thatcher herself maintained a fairly socially conservative tone to her party politics. She herself actually wasn't that bothered about it. She was one, I think, of maybe a dozen Tory MPs who voted in favour of the decriminalisation of homosexuality on the first bill when it failed. Thatcher was not actually that interested in social policies. And there was a very strong element of social liberalism in the party. But the big news, unified the Tory party, was an economic vision, which was a traditional, less, if you want, Milton Friedman, Hayek-style economics. That's gone. So when Corbyn does as well as Corbyn did in the last election, we shouldn't really be that surprised. There's a hell of a lot of polling evidence out there which indicates that there is far more appetite at the moment in Britain for fairly centre-left economic approaches, highly interventionist, subsidies, protectionist approach to economics than there is for the kind of free trade, free market policies that went gangbusters in the 80s and 90s.
No, and it could be quite interesting is when you look at the populist movements inside Europe, people say they're far right, but when you look at them, they're economically actually generally kind of left, centre-left. It's on social issues where they tend to be more authoritarian. And I don't know where Corbyn is on most social issues, which makes me think he is significantly more conservative on them than the general Labour Party. So could we have a situation similar to what we've seen in the rest of Europe, where this time it is effectively the left-wing party who can run the candidate that can hit what has been referred to as the magic square for far-right parties?
The thing is, my suspicion is that Corbyn is probably fairly liberal socially, but not perhaps anything like as socially liberal as a lot of the people who are around him. I don't think that maybe he simply just knows, he has a political cop on to realise, that kind of progressive intersectionality, identity politics, doesn't go down terribly well with the Labour voter north of the Wash. The Labour voter north of the Wash in Newcastle, in Huddersfield, Hull, Sheffield, wherever, they are actually quite socially conservative, and they are also patriotic. They are, in a sense, I wouldn't even say in a narrow sense, they are quite nationalist in a way which the metropolitan Labour voter simply isn't. They are internationalist, in the language of the left. They are post-national, supranationalist. That's why, for them, the idea of dissolving nationality within the higher, in a larger, higher group like the EU really doesn't represent a problem. They say, at least, that they feel as at home in London or as they would in Brussels or Shanghai or in LA. That's alien, completely alien to the sentiments of the Labour voter in the north or in Wales. So he has to work out some kind of a convivance with those people. Now, the Brexit, one of the questions we're going to be looking at is, how does the Brexit Party work in this? At the moment, they're still in slightly over 10% of the vote. Where do they go? Do they stay at that level? Do they maintain it? Does Johnson get punished because even though he promised that there would be Brexit by the 31st of October, there isn't? Or has he succeeded in selling the narrative that it was Parliament what stopped me? You have to give me my majority so I can do what I want. But I've done a deal. Everything is there. I have done what I said I would do in everything but in name. And so trust me on this.
I'm actually interested to see how hard Johnson runs this against Parliament. Is this going to be a sort of hard line? This treasonous Parliament has stopped me from doing this. Show them the door kind of thing. Or is it going to be more of a look? A deal needs to be done. I have a deal. I'll get it through, and this nightmare will finally be over. But I think we'll have time to discuss this in detail.
Sure.
I want to move on to the Martin Kenny situation.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rough old deal for Murt up in Leitrim.
Yeah. So if you've missed this, Martin Kenny has had his car burned out outside of his home. He had been speaking recently about asylum seekers and the need for basically pushing back against those who were saying that there was no space for asylum seekers in rural Ireland, or that certain rural towns were not suitable for it. And he said after that he received death threats and then his car was burned out. Now, I don't really have an issue with people saying that that is thuggish behaviour, or that is very clearly illegal behaviour and should not happen. But I do have this issue with, I mean, we've had various people come out, from ministers all the way down, saying that this is an assault on democracy, that this is an attack on democracy, an attack on an elected member is an attack on all of societies, it's an attack on democracy. That was from Minister Charlie Flanagan. And we've had various people come out and do it. And I do have, Senator McDowell actually came out and said it was disgusting and anti-democratic. I have a bit of an issue with this for the very simple reason that, okay, let's say that we accept an attack on a person because of his position is anti-democratic, which I think would be fair, to physically attack someone because of their position, which may come as news to some of the Antifa or far-left forces in Ireland, although I have quite enjoyed their newfound respect for the idea that violence to someone based on their opinion is terribly anti-democratic. All of this presupposes that the reason that that car went up in fire, and I don't think anything has been confirmed publicly, we don't even know if it was arson, was to assume it was because of what Kennedy was saying, or what Martin Kenny was saying. And so far, no proof of that has been provided. So there is this very quick assumption that this is coming from people who have, as the senator said, an ultra-right-wing agenda. And I don't think... It is a very quick jump to assuming that people know why this happened, when there has been no investigation yet, no one has been arrested, no one has been charged with anything. And based on the information that's been made publicly available, we don't know what happened. And I don't like the quickness of these people to come off the mark and go, well, this is an assault on democracy. It may be. It may be very undemocratic. It may be that someone just committed a random act of arson. It may be that something in his car went the wrong way and the car just went up.
May have driven across the front of somebody's lawn.
Maybe someone just doesn't like him. And not for his political opinions, or not at least not for this political opinion.
If any citizen is attacked because of a political opinion, I suppose in a sense that is an attack on democracy, or it's at least it's a non-democratic attack. I do have a certain amount of sympathy with the idea that if you attack a member of the Dáil, a member of the Oireachtas, or you attempt to use violence or a threat of violence to try and intimidate a member of the Oireachtas, that is an attack on democracy. I don't have a problem with that. I like in my little naive, romantic way, I think of Leinster House as being a temple to the people. And these people are, in a sense, the TDs, the senators, are the priests of our civic religion. But we have no clue why this was done.
If this was done to intimidate a sitting TD to change his opinion or to stop speaking out on an issue, yes, then there is a very strong argument that it is offensive to democracy. If this was done because Martin Kenny is disliked by someone for whatever reason, then I don't think so. Then I don't think we can make any argument that this is offensive to democracy. No. And it's less what people are saying. It is the fact that there has been this immediate, we know what's happening here, when they can't know.
Yeah, and it's a very, very different situation. But the story that it slightly reminded me of, and which I would have thought was a salutary moment for people to realise that, you know, you don't have to actually have a comment all the time and immediately. Do you remember the group of schoolboys that were waiting for the bus after there was a pro-life march in Washington?
Oh, the Covington boys. The Covington boys,
precisely so. And a piece of video went all around, which appeared to be one of these Covington boys smirking in the face of an elderly tribal leader, shaman, and music maker. And they were singing songs and chants that were Trump-esque and hostile to whoever. There was one of those black evangelical Christian groups which believe that, I think, that white people are all descended or the sons of Satan and have some pretty salty things to say about the gay community and the best social policies to be used to deal with gay people. And of course, and we saw this flood of reaction. Everybody had to get on the bandwagon immediately, including bishops and philosophers and writers and academics. And then if they'd only waited, as it turned out, you didn't even have to wait like 2 or 3 days. I think 12 hours, Gary, at the time when it was the story started to evolve. No, it's a different situation, I suppose, but this is the same kind of thing. Why not just say wait and see? And if you want to make a statement, said, well, obviously, you know, must be very upsetting for the TD. And we hope that this is not the result of some kind of attack on him as a TD, because that would be very upsetting. At least couch the language differently.
I mean, I did, because I was reading the BBC on this. Mm. And for all the BBC gets complaints against it, it does have, in general, a higher standard of professionalism than most of the Irish media. Yes. I would say at an institutional level than all of the Irish media. On the individual level, some reporters are very, very solid on this. Their headline was suspected arson attack at home of Sinn Féin TD Martin Kenny.
Yes.
Perfectly factual, makes no claims about it, no assumptions about it. Just says this has happened. The Gardaí are investigating it as an incident of criminal damage by fire. Yeah. And it is just the factual steps and a little bit from Mary Lou McDonald. And that, I know it does mention her quote that this is an assault on democratic systems. It's more balanced than the Irish media's take on this. It's a lot slower to sensationalise it or to present something that they frankly can't know. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying they don't know if they're right.
No, and you would have thought, as I said, at this stage, the lesson should have been learned. But it's slightly big. I don't want to labour this too much, because I think it's not a huge story. But there is one point which I think would bear a little bit of reflection, which is we don't have to react immediately to everything. Because if that's what we have to do in politics today, or in journalism, or in commentary, what that means is nobody will ever think. You're never going to have a moment of pause to reflect. Now, this is not a complicated situation. It's either one thing or another, probably. But if it's a policy situation or something, no, you have to have an opinion. You have to have it now, and you have to, and it has to be pretty hardline and hard edge. Now, that's not to say that the politicians don't still today prevaricate and and fluff and fudge and whatever they do. But increasingly there's this expectation. There's a hell of a lot of right with politicians every so often saying, I don't know. Why are politicians are terrified of saying, I don't know? As you know, I'm a bit of a fan of a German philosopher called Schopenhauer. No, I'm not anything like an expert. I read him back in my youth days. And one of his, he's called very often the philosopher of pessimism. And I'm a great believer that there is a little bit to be said for a little bit of pessimism in the face of unrelenting optimism and that hope is the only virtue. And in the same way, while it's good to know things and good to have worked out positions and good to have a world view, it's also perfectly acceptable, surely, at times when you don't know, to say, I don't know. Come back to me in 2 or 3 days and I'll tell you what I think. But right now, I don't know.
I mean, I think, as I said, my primary issue with this is there is this little bit of a sort of protected class thing going on here in the comments from TDs. The sort of, well, this happened, and if this was deliberate, well, no one is saying it's deliberate. Everyone is assuming it's deliberate. Flanagan's comment, Justice Minister Charlie Flanagan's comment, an attack on an elected member is an attack on all of society. It is an attack on democracy.
Yeah.
I don't think burning out a TD's car is an attack on democracy society, unless it is done for political reasons. And that is, they're all just assuming that. Or maybe they're not assuming that, and they legitimately believe if anything bad happens to a TD, which would be themselves, it's an assault on the very fabric of society, which is a little bit precious.
Yeah, it's a little bit over the top, a little bit excessive.
But look, we'll wait and see if it comes out that this was a deliberate arson, and it was committed by whoever. We'll report it, and we'll discuss it. But there's just, it's just like, it's happened, immediately comment, don't think about it, you know what's going to happen, even though you clearly don't. So, I suppose we will close, Michael, with a little piece of news that people, unless they're interested in the wider European affairs, and keeping a fairly close eye, because these were regional elections, may not have seen. The Italian regional elections happened recently. I believe the results came in on the Monday.
Uh-huh.
The 28th, I think.
Yeah, usually you have 2 days voting, and then you get the first results will come in on the Monday.
The League won an incredible victory.
It's a stonker. We should just very, very quickly, until recently, the League, led by Matteo Salvini, was in power with the Five Star Movement, which is a very odd mishmash of populism and eco policies and techno-fascism and corporate liberalism, and it got all over the place. Founded by and led by a popular television comedian. Anyway, he left. He wasn't happy anymore and has fled into the opposition. The Five Star Movement defied everybody's expectations and ended up forming a coalition with the PD, Partito Democratico, which is the
centre right, aren't they?
No, centre left. These days,
centre left. Oh yes,
they're centre left. Which is the Democratic Party, which is actually the inheritor of the old Communist Party. What would have been Communist Party in the '70s and the '80s then became and it's evolved into the Democratic Party. The bit of the Communist Party that didn't want to be reformed was called the Refounded Communist Party. Now it's just the Communist Party. Anyway, the thing is, this was in Umbria, right? Now, Umbria is Italy. It historically was divided, you could say, kind of, sort of, into three divisions: north, centre, and south. And the centre was red. So Emilia-Romagna, where you've got places like Bologna, Modena, Umbria, which is like Tuscany, but nice. And you got Tuscany beside it, Florence, Siena, all those places. Umbria is Assisi, Orvieto, whatever. The Marche over on the other side, and then into Lazio. That was the red bit, obviously. And it was, historically, did well, very well. It was well managed, whatever. But it was red, even though Mussolini, God bless him, and I'm saying that's a joke, please. Not an endorsement of Mussolini. It was from the Predapios from the centre. The League. Now, the League was founded, and until very recently was called, not the League, but the Lega Nord, the League of the North, or the League of Lombardy, Lega Nord, Lega Lombarda, has come down into Umbria, where it would not have any kind of historical indigenous support. And in its coalition, the coalition knocked together 57% of the vote, and the League by itself took 37% of the vote. That is...
37% of the vote is what the Democratic Party and the Five Star Movement and that coalition took in total.
No, the Five Star, last year, it's only a year ago, Five Star in Umbria took 27% of the vote, and they're down to 7% of the vote. For PDs, the Democratic Party, to be on 30%, if they're... They weren't even on 30%, actually, I think. Democratic Party in the coalition took 22% of the vote. That is just savage result for the former communists in a place like Umbria.
So why this is interesting is that the League pulls the plug on the government about 2 months ago. Summer. They get forced into opposition. Five Star and the PDs come together. This was the first time the Five Star PD Alliance has put forward candidates for election. So basically it's the first time that this new coalition has ever been tested. And they just bombed. Crushed. And not in an area, like, this is a place they should have coasted. I think that Umbria has only ever been governed by the communists or left-wing parties.
Communists are
so for the League to come in and just... The League and Silvio Berlusconi's to take 57%.
The coalition here is almost interesting. I mean, it was also, by the way, after Salvini left the government, it was widely seen as he's made a boo-boo. He thought this would bring the government down. It would collapse it. There would have to be an election instead. There was the president didn't give a dissolution. A technocrat was put in. And they went and they found a modus vivendi with the left, and they created so they thought, oh, Salvini's in trouble now. And there was an expectation that maybe this would see that the League was going to go into a bit of a knockback. The League gets a reason. You got Forza Italia down at 5.5%, which, God boot the days, once upon a time it would have been much, much higher than that. You've got the Brothers of Italy, described inevitably in the Irish press as being far right. Now, I'm not going to quibble that there are members of the Brothers of Italy, Fratelli d'Italia, who would have been once upon a time members of the National Alliance, who would previously have been members of the Social Movement, who would have previously been members of the Italian Fascist Party. But, you know, people change and they evolve. Gianfranco Fini, who would have led that party for many years and was part of that evolution, had created what essentially is a modern conservative party, but maybe with a hankering back for a black uniform every now and then. That, I mean, they got 10% of the vote together in this coalition. That's bizarre stuff. Now, why are we talking about, other than the fact that I found Italian politics interesting, this is important for Europe, for a start, because while the League has rowed back recently from its previously fairly hardline Eurosceptic position, because there was a belief that if they did they get into power, that they would ultimately push to leave the euro. If Italy was to fail, and the Italian economy has big problems, it's not like Spain or Greece or Ireland. There are not enough chips out there to cover this debt. There are technical reasons regarding who holds the debt in Italy, because a lot of Italians hold what they call BOT, which are the government bonds, which make it less likely. But what we're looking at here is something which is part of what's happening in Britain. This is something happening all over Europe. Gary, you will have seen the results of the election in Poland.
And the German results.
You see, I think even the Dutch results, not quite so much. But like you have this, Law and Justice Party. Gets 43%. Comes in at 43% of the vote. I just want to just advert to one thing, because I think it's brilliant. The second party, the Civic Coalition, right, got 27% of the vote. And if you look up the Civic Party's page on Wikipedia. When they describe political parties, they give the roughly the ideology of the party, you know, historically maybe where the roots of the party are. The ideology of the Civic Coalition is as follows, right? Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Liberal democracy, pro-Europeanism, okay? The mm-hmm. factions within it are, the factions are liberalism, progressivism, green politics, social liberalism, social democracy, anti-clericalism, liberal conservatism, and Christian democracy.
Mm.
That is what I call one fruit salad of a political party. Or you could call it Fianna Fáil, once upon a time. I don't know. We are looking at a realignment of policy. What you said earlier, I think, applies very much in Italy, and it applies in Poland too, where the old rules about who, about economic policy matching social policies, they're breaking down.
Yes, a timely reminder that perhaps it was not wise for the left to turn away from actual workers towards...
That's the heart of it. And, you know, you could argue, I think reasonably, that's one of the reasons, at least one of the very good reasons, why Hillary loses to Trump in the United States, even.
Well, I mean, you look at the Rust Belt, yeah, I would say that was the fairly clear takeaway from that.
Hillary felt that she had, or the Democrats, and have felt this for some time, that while they may struggle at a state level, at a federal level, they have constructed this coalition between women, ethnic minorities, and other minorities, that when you bring it all together, and then you're bringing your standard liberals and progressives, it is unbeatable. Turns out that the problem with playing that game is that eventually poor white people decide that they're going to have an identity too, and they're going to vote according to the interests of their identity rather than their historic party allegiances.
Yeah, and there's generally more of them in Western countries.
And you know what? There are actually a lot more of them than anybody else, even in the United States. What's going to happen in Italy is absolutely unclear, which is...
Do you think this will bring down the PD five-star?
I don't think so. I don't see that there's a... Regional elections in Italy are important because regional governments have power. What this does is, at a very grand scale, if you're looking in Ireland, say one of the larger political parties makes massive gains in county councils, that's a big problem in the medium term for the other parties, because we know the more county councillors you have, the more power you have in the local councils to do those things locally that make you popular. Mm. But also, you're growing the next generation of people that are going to go on to national politics. And that's very important too. But in the short term, this doesn't create any kind of mechanism.
Oh, no mechanism. But I mean, it's the first showing of the PD five-star alliance. From what I've heard, it's not a terribly happy alliance at all.
It can't be, because, I mean, the PDs and the...
They come together. Salvini fails to bring the government down. He goes into opposition. They come together. And then they have their first... I believe this is basically a by-election in a region that they have controlled for generations. They get annihilated.
Yeah.
And then there's got to be a lot of questions.
Like,
Is this a good idea?
If you're the Democratic Party, and you say, we've aligned ourselves with these people and we're down at 22% number yet, are we 22% because we've attached ourselves to a toxic brand? Now, I don't think that's true. I think the PDs, the Democratic Party in Italy, have just massive problems of their own. But if you're... The five-star movement is incredibly unstable. And that's what I mean, if you're looking for a possible change, I could see something happening there, potentially, that they may say, you know what, we were doing okay, and now it looks like we are going to be absolutely destroyed.
I mean, Italian politics are not my speciality. I do know a couple of people involved in Italian politics. I have maybe a bit more of an awareness of it than most in Ireland. But I do know there's another regional vote coming up in January in I think the region is called Emilia-Romagna.
Romagna, which is direct, which is north. It's between Lombardy and Umbria. It's historically very red.
So, I mean, that comes in, that goes the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Happens twice. Maybe that is the sort of, like, we're just hurting ourselves by being in this. And all it takes is one of them to go, electorally, this is damaging for us.
Also, it's absolutely a marriage of convenience. Policy-wise, these are two groups that can't get on. They can cobble enough similarities together to keep you going in the short term. I don't see it. But we live in strange times. We live in very strange times indeed. And presumably those times will still be strange when we return on Sunday. But we'll hope that people don't get sucked down the vortex of Halloween and into their televisions and eaten by monsters in between times.
No, I mean, by Sunday we could have new developments in Brexit. Maybe the entire thing will be stopped. We could see if we're going to have a snap election. And as we're now paying attention to Italian politics, that could also totally collapse at any time, because it's Italian politics. It's an evergreen
truth.
And
you know what? I was saying to you before, talking to some friends up in Dáil Éire, and I know that amongst certain elements of the House, we're in a little state of absolute panic in the last couple of days at the prospect that Leo might pull the plug and run for an election.
I mean, I must say I was actually quite surprised by that, because I haven't been talking to any of the Fianna Fáilers recently, and I hadn't gotten their opinion on it. But when you said that they were a bit frantic over this, there was a little bit of, well, surely it's your job to be ready for this sort of thing.
Ready, yeah. Well, not to be fair, I'm not saying about the Fianna Fáil, but I don't know how much better they are than Fine Gael. I did a bit of work once with the Fine Gael campaign for Europe. And the thing that really I just thought was joyful was it was genuinely, they behaved as if the European election was a surprise. Not that the date had been set 5 years previously. And for 5 years, everybody had known when it was going to be. So if you can be surprised by a European election, I think the prospect of Leo saying, you know what, lads, it looks very much like we're not going to take any seats in the four by-elections. I don't know if that'll do us any great good at a macro level. So why not just cancel those? And we're up in 32. The last poll gives us 32 and 24 for Fianna Fáil. Maybe this is the moment to go in the light of Buttongate.
I mean, I do sort of pity the winners of the by-elections if they don't go now. Because let's say Malcolm Byrne takes the seat, which I think is fairly likely.
Yeah, he's a warm favourite, surely.
Yeah, I mean, he's, as candidates go, he's pretty much what you want to take a seat in that area. So let's say we don't have a snap election, he wins, and then in January we decide we're going to have an election just after Brexit because there's been a deal the Brexit. Yeah. And so Byrne has the seat for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, now you do it all over again. And there's a chance you will just lose entirely and you haven't even worn a groove into the chair in your office.
And a very decent chance you could lose the seat. Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, by-elections are an entirely different beast than a general election. The people who will win comfortably in by-elections, who you put them in a general election, they're not a contender at all.
Long history of that. Long, long history.
Now, having said that, I mean, if Malcolm gets some time to bed down, I'd be interested to see how he'd do. But I mean, if there's a general election soon after he gets elected, he won't. And then it's a bit of a nightmare, frankly.
Yeah, it'll be a question. God, did we just vote for you? Why are you back again?
But then even from a candidate perspective, you're running people in these elections and they're going to be thinking these things as well. Like, how much money do I want to spend on this?
Yeah.
Like, how much of my time do I want to put on this if in 3 months I'm just gone? I mean,
if you're a candidate and you're not independently wealthy, that's a real problem, because You in Irish politics, you've only got so many donors that you can go to. You know as well as I do, there are, I think, excessively tight limits in Ireland regarding raising money and the maximum funds you can give, maximum amounts you can give as an individual, and the reporting to SIPO and all that, the publication of names or whatever.
No, I don't agree with you on that. And I mean, I've had to go, and I imagine you've had to go as well, to donors for various political candidates to say that you should make a donation to this party or to this candidate. And they ask questions generally. And I imagine one of the questions is, sure, will you not just be back in 3 months anyway? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, and particularly in this kind of case, they well, should I save up or should I wait? Nobody likes a winter campaign anyway, and let alone, God, imagine.
I mean, I'm going to admit, I'm going to love a winter campaign this year, Michael, because I'm not canvassing, I'm not involved with any of the political parties for the first time in God knows how long at this point. Any work I've done with them is purely office-based. And so I'm just going to sit there and I'm not going to have to worry that I'm going to lose my job and I'm not going to have to go out in the pissing wind. So I'm going to enjoy this immensely because I'm going to stay indoors.
You say that, but if and when an election comes, what happens with some bright, fresh-faced young chap or chapess arrives at your door with a little bag of money and says, Gary, please, come and get me elected. I think the little bag of money wins out in the end. And you're out there in the wind and the rain and standing looking at posters thinking, what the fuck am I doing in here? But
you know me so well, Michael. Better than I know myself, and I think you're probably right, yes. But I'm hoping that doesn't happen this time.
Oh, I would never hope against a little bag of money.
Well, I mean, you're a Fianna Fáiler after
all. It's deep, it's dark, it's there. What can I say? Anyway, I think, as I said, we'll draw a cowl over that. Wish you all a happy Halloween. And we will return in November to see if indeed things have remained as the same. We're back with our Sunday miscellany. And until then, it's bye-bye from me.
And have a happy Samhain.